Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
First scrimmage in the books today. It was a stunning, so to speak, comeback for Team Blue after they were blanked through the course of 50 minutes of normal play and only to go into 3-on-3 score with 4:39 to go, or 4:39 elapsed in the overtime, and then again at 4:54, and then winning it in a shootout. So I'm not sure how the white squad is looking at this, Marty, but we do have one official scrimmage in the books in advance of two games over the next 3 days to kick off the preseason.
Half the guys are 1-0 and half the guys are 0-1. So that's
What do you think they were on face-offs today?
Exactly. What were the high danger chances? What are the expected goals at the end of scrimmage? It's scrimmage, right? So would I have liked to have seen more goals? Absolutely. But I like to think that more goals would have led to more like, oh my goodness, Luukkonen or Levi or nobody could stop a puck. So that way you can kind of focus on, okay, it's the first scrimmage. For a lot of those guys, they've done some scrimmage, you know, leading up to it in their captain's practice, but not an organized scrimmage with that many guys. There's
referees some took a beating today. It was nonstop from both benches. There were two officials out there, and the players were all over them.
Oh. Okay, well, that to me is like, settle down. It's the scrimmage. Like, I get it.
I say that tongue-in-cheek. It was fun. They were blasting them in a pretty hilarious way.
Everybody wants to win. I get mad if I play, you know, 11-day power play, and there should have been a penalty or a penalty shot. Nobody's calling it. So I get what you're saying. But, look, there's going to be a period of transition into, okay, what's the system? And the players are obviously having meetings, and they're going to focus a little bit more about some of the systems that Lindy Ruff and the coaching staff is trying to emphasize on right now. But would I have liked to have seen, like, there was a few breakaways. Would I have liked to have seen guys score on breakaway? Yes. Like, if you got a breakaway, score on breakaway. I want to see that go in. Mm-hmm. It didn't happen. But Lanius said was it on his own back, on his own rebound, was able to put it in the back end. Like, okay, There was some guys that were able to find the back of the net. Overall, it's a scrimmage. I'm more excited about tomorrow night and saying, hey, how do you get off the first preseason game knowing that you don't have many of them?
Yeah, well, like, you know what you're going to say on Tuesday? You'll be more excited about the season opener, because I guarantee you won't be super thrilled to be talking about Saturday and Monday in the preseason games. So it's just the way we defer.
I've already written my long paper for Monday, for Tuesday morning after the weekend. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to October 4th. Like, that's where I'm at right now. But no. There's some steps to it. I get it. You know, it's what they've been on the ice like a couple of days. Like, they play a scrimmage. It's not going to be tic-tac-toe-y all over the place.
No. And it's hard to say, you know, and certainly hard to, well, I don't want to get into, you know, discussing people's opinions or evaluations, or even, I don't know how you would describe this. It's just, you can't believe everything you read, just like you can't believe everything you hear from the two of us on a daily basis. Like, you're going to have your own opinion. So all I'm saying is, if you were, your only way, which was everybody who was not in the media, if your only way to follow the scrimmage today was on social media through reporters, you might be inclined to think a certain way about how the game was played. I'm not going to I was a little surprised when I saw, you know, a reference to the lack of scoring chances. I think there's multiple ways to look at it here. I think the pace was incredibly high until, like, the first goal was actually scored in, I'll call it, the third quarter. They played two 25-minute halves. They had a scrape in the middle of each of the halves, so it felt like four quarters, right? I don't think it was super high danger against Luukkonen and Levi, who went head to head in the first half of this. But I thought the speed at which the game was being attacked in the slot area was impressive. And my only takeaway from before the scoring got started was the fact that you were often seeing, perhaps ironically, the new bottom six guys involved the most. And to your point, would you like to have seen them score? Yes. But the reality is these players are not 35 to 40 goal scorers. So it's not going to come as naturally for them, right?
That's something to a feather in his lap if you're Kevin Adams and you say, I'm looking out there and it's like my depth guys that I'm seeing really the speed that we talked about over the summertime.
Not to notice the McLeod and Zucker speed, honestly.
Zucker was the slowest of the guys that they've acquired. When we look at the NHL Edge stats and they look at speed burst and, top end speed, Zucker was maybe the slowest of the group. But that, Malenstein, Lafferty, Obi Kubel, McLeod, and Zucker were faster than the five guys that went out the door. So you're going to see a focus on speed, and those guys will show it.
So thank you for mentioning Malenstein, because I think he was one of the more noticeable earlier as well, which is probably how it should be based on the competition or whatever you want to call it that he finds himself in. We look at this as a team that has some extras potentially here in the 12, 13, 14 range among the forwards, and having not seen them play a full camp yet, we don't know exactly how it's going to be lined up. But obviously, you know, when Malenstein came out today, it was no surprise to see him with Obi Kubel and Lafferty on a line. I thought Malenstein was the most noticeable of the three, and perhaps I shouldn't have put Zucker in the same, you know, quote there about McLeod and Zucker getting there fast. The thing with Zucker is he's a veteran who has scored, so he doesn't have to be at the exact same speed as McLeod. His intuition is going to get him to pucks quicker than some players. So that's where
he moves the puck quicker than others. That's the thing with Zucker is I feel he never hangs on to the puck an extra second or two or three too late that you're like, man, he put himself in a bad position. He was, you know, he has two guys over the top of him and he turned it over. I think at times with Zucker, he tries to move the puck so fast that maybe he'll turn it over, but it's for playing fast, for moving the puck fast. That is another element that I thought, he could bring. And obviously that's something that we'll be keeping an eye on. But you mentioned Malenstein, Lafferty, Nicola Obi Kubel.
When you look at the... Cube is the nickname, Cube. And you hear it all the time when guys Knack. Are, you know,
I
trying
would
to
call
get...
him Knack, but that's really? Cube, that's fine. Like for Kubel, like I get it, but it's N-A-K, right? I would call him Knack, but with
even Cube, Hockey Reference has him as Cube, K-U-B-E.
They do. Okay. Oh, well, yeah. Good. So I love it. So Hockey Reference is right for once with the nickname. So that's good. It's been a little like spotty with others, but anyway, the fact that Malenstein, Lafferty, and Cube, Obi Kubel, were on a line together, and I noticed just the scrimmage, but Peterka, Thompson, Tuck are going to be a line. Yeah. And I would assume that they would want to start with Benson, Cousins, and Quinn. That's how, like, you put them together. Yes. And you have Zucker, McLeod, Greenway. So what's interesting, the same way we can only take the scrimmage with a little grain of salt, we can only see just the roster and the lines with a grain of salt in certain situations. That Krebs was with Kulik and Roseanne. So would that be more the extra guys, right? The, you know, 13, 14, 15 guys right there. And, you know, Krebs is somebody that Kevin Adams knows well, that, you know, Marty Wolford and Matt Ellis know well. But when you look at Seth Appert and Lindy Ruff, the door's wide open. It's who can take that spot? Fourth line center. Who's got it? And in this scrimmage, it was Malenstein, Lafferty, and Obi Kubel that were aligned together, almost like your fourth line for the season. Oh, wait, gotta remove the mute. I know.
It's interesting to look at Krebs in all of that, in exactly how you just laid it out. But at the same time, if you take the line he was playing on today and look back at how he was used at the end of last season, which is let's try to give you more opportunities in the absence of Mittelstadt to play with more, you know, higher end, whatever you want to call them, players, prospects, you know. And so I'm not sure Krebs could look at that as a negative today, right? Like, well, if you're playing with Yuri Kulik and Isak Rosén, like, isn't that giving you an opportunity to create?
Yeah,
I think it is.
Yeah, and you look at, you know, Levi had to make a couple of saves on, you know, a chance that Kulik had when the puck was in the crease and Rosén had a nice takeaway and, you know, Krebs was involved in there. Krebs had set up Cousins one time. It, you know, there's opportunities, and that is a line that you say, hey, if you want to have a bigger offensive role, if you're Peyton Krebs and you've been saying, I can give you more offense, I can give you more than four goals. Like, I want to give you more than four goals. I can give you more than four goals. Well, okay. Here's two higher end prospect, and see how you perform with them, how your instincts react with them, because we know what Kulik and Rosén can do instinctively on the ice offensively. And this is a scrimmage. This is not NHL playing against the Florida Panthers. This is a scrimmage. You will be given opportunities, and there will be opening for you to show offense when it's there. Kulik and Rosén, they have that in them. Now it's Krebs to try to join along and show that. But yeah, I think that is a great way to look at it. I think originally Krebs probably looking at the lineup and saying, ugh, I'm like fifth line. Hey, wait a second. Like, glass half full, bud. You're playing with two top end guys. Yes. Like, be excited about that.
Yes. And conversely, on the white side of the ledger, why it wasn't blue and gold, I don't know. I don't make these decisions, but it would have been a nicer color mashup, right? If you had the blue versus gold. But anyway, the white lineup featured, of course, Östlund with Hellenius and Rusek.
Yeah.
And again, lower chances perhaps overall in the course of the first 25 minutes, but the most noticeable player in the second half today, Konsta Hellenius.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Like, there's, again, if you want to go glass half full, glass half empty, and there's way too much analysis here. Part of you would go, how come I didn't notice you in the first half? then when you look at him in the second half, it was actually like you would have been all over this in your intermission telestration, because the shift that preceded the goal was one of the most pronounced zone times we had seen from an offensive trio. Hellenius's line in the previous shift was all around it, right? And I was like, oh, this is a really good sign. Next shift, now I could be wrong here, but, and again, you're rolling three lines on each side, right? But I think the Hellenius line got quote unquote double shifted. So they were on. Then the Thompson line was on, and Hellenius was watching super closely from the bench. Thompson was kind of, he was playing it a certain way and was like the late guy back through the neutral zone and had been out there a little bit. Hellenius knew that he was going to jump for a line change real soon. And he read it as soon as he hopped onto the ice, sprung through the middle, hook, go, gets the breakaway, jams the brakes on, puts in the rebound after being initially denied. And it was like, ooh, that's like a million. That's what you want to see, right?
Yes.
So everything that had preceded it is what I loved. And then the staying with it to make sure that he was able to beat Reimer on the back.
The staying with it was impressive, because not that most players would curl to the corner, but because it was on his offside, right? He had to go back, get a stick, and get the backhand. So that's great. Now, what I was, or, you know, would be looking for, and maybe if it was our first telecast, I would have circled that, is that
tomorrow it's 6:30
pregame on MSG. Everybody tune in. We may sprinkle some new rule changes as we go, like Hellenius not sitting on the bench waiting for his player to get there, because players are not allowed anymore to have either one leg hanging over the bench waiting for somebody, or sitting on the bench with both legs. They'll get like the Maximov and Genov, right? Like Max did that all the time. The Ovechkin does that all the time. So that's what I would have circled. I would have circled, yeah, okay, this goal happened. But more importantly, here's a player that understands new rule changes, and then you circle him on the bench that he's not, hanging over, and mm-hmm. then he's jumping and joining. And I love, you know me, I have loved guys that come off the bench ready. When yeah. you come off the bench and you get a breakaway, that's because you're paying attention. That's mm-hmm. because you're watching, and you got your hockey, sense and hockey helmet on, that mm-hmm. you know what you're going to do before it happens. Was mm-hmm. I don't want to say I was disappointed with Consolinius in the prospect challenge. He just had a couple of moments, but it looks like he was trying to do too much. It looks like he was trying to stick handle a lot, and almost like he wanted to put all that pressure on him. It's prospect mm-hmm. challenge, dude. Like, just play. Just get mm-hmm. yourself going for next week. This is better. The fact that he showed so well in the second half to me is what we were all expected.
Yeah, I think, reluctant as always here to, to spit out a cliche. But if you were to compare the second half to the first half today, you would assume that maybe at some point one of the coaches had just tapped him on the shoulder or in the intermission said, just play.
Yeah.
Just play, right? Because that's what it looked like in the second half with his instincts, his speed, and how he makes others around him better. So again, it's a scrimmage, but do something, right? We joke about that all the time.
Jim Corsi line, you're good, just play and you'll play good. Sometimes that's what you got to do.
And, when you then look at now the expectations for Paterka after an almost 30-goal season and the likelihood of him playing with Thompson and Tuck, which is how the scrimmage played out today.
Yeah.
Well, he'd been around it, and they were up 1-0, and there was, a loose puck at the top of the circle. You would probably have thought in a second's instance, it was like, oh, kind of a dead play. Jumped on the loose puck, top of the circle, boom, bar down, far corner, right? It was like, oh, thanks for the reminder, right, of the skill set there. So that's what allowed them to have a 2-0 lead. They played it out through, like I said, the end of 50 minutes of real time. And I would say that there wasn't a huge push despite a little 6-on-5 opportunity at the end. Feather in the cap of Devin Levi and Felix Sandstrom as they posted the shutout through the course of
split a puck together.
They split a puck together, but Sandstrom doesn't get to enjoy it because it's a scrimmage. They play 3-on-3, and largely nothing happened in the course of 3-on-3 until Benson scored with 21 seconds left. Okay, now it's like, oh, Blue is thinking we can actually steal this from them, even though they won the real game. So you have a face-off at center. They pull the goalie. Now it's 4-on-3. Not much is happening. Cousins walks into one at the top of the slot, misses the net. Byram, from a sharp angle, puts the rebound in with 6 seconds left. Now Blue is fired up, right? And they want the shootout.
Yes.
And of course, Jack Quinn scores the only goal in the shootout, and they win. They each had 3 shooters, and Blue kind of wrecks the day for Sandstrom. But anyway, amusement within the scrimmage, right?
Excited so. The players are mm-hmm. in such silly moments. Like, with a few seconds left, let's pull the goalie. Yeah. And the guys are on the bench. They're so animated. They're, come on, let's go. And then you're like, we want to shoot out. And everybody's like arguing, we want to shoot out because they want to settle it, right? Mm-hmm. So that to me is always funny when it gets to like those moments in training camp where you don't know if you're going to have a shootout, but everybody is saying, we want to shoot out, especially Blue. We want to win this. We came back.
And isn't that perhaps what might have stood out for you and fellow NHL alum when you would have read Kyle Okposo's retirement letter yesterday, where it's all the moments, including the dumb ones and the this and the that. And then, that's, as you described it there, that's what I'm thinking. Like, you're in a scrimmage and you have like 3 or 4 players who are just wired to chirp at the officials, right? Yeah. Why? It's a scrimmage, right? It doesn't matter. But that's what makes a career, I'm assuming, right? Like that's what you walk away with. Some of those, why am I still remembering these moments?
No, 100%. Coming off of the 2004-2005 lockout, you know, first preseason with the new rules, and then the, regardless of the score, there was a shootout. Mm-hmm. Well, half our bench was already down the tunnel when we played Tampa
like
Bay
the Oilers.
At Quebec Center. Exactly. They didn't know, and then they're coming back. They're like, I want to go. I want to do a shootout. Like, I remember thinking that was so funny because, you know, half the guys weren't paying attention. They weren't focusing on what's going to happen after the game, regardless of the score, right? So I do recall that. Recalled so many things. We used to have training camp in St. Catharines, that small little barn, and the scrimmages in that barn were like basically playing on a half an NHL rink. So that was cool. I was just... We're with the Sheriff Shane Knighty this week in New York at the NHL meeting, and he was talking about his first rookie game in 1995, the Sabres against the Toronto Maple Leafs, and he was on the penalty bench, and his, you know, partner had just gotten into a fight, and they jumped over the glass just to get into another fight. Like, the door wouldn't open, and the NHL, like, person wouldn't open the door, so they jump over the small glass to get back into a fight. Like, these are the silly... Like, it's rookie game. What are you doing? That's what it is, right? Oh, and... 3-on-3, Dennis Gilbert got a good chance too. He cut in from the right side and came in. Yeah. I thought maybe that was going to be that. That would have sealed it for White. Like, if he scores, it's 3-0 and it's over.
Yes, and the strange part about that is, and I would have to ask somebody for the game footage here, but after he missed, he fired the puck back down to his end, knowing that they had kind of, you know, exhausted themselves a little bit on a sprint, wanted to regroup, right? And probably be able to get, but I wasn't tracking it that closely. But I will say this, it wasn't long after when Benson scored the goal. So I can't remember what White did in wake of having it sent back into their own zone and how it ended up leading to the Benson goal. But anyway, it's neither here nor there.
Well, Gilbert did have a good thing, because you're right. It was 45 seconds left in the overtime when Gilbert got the chance, and then Benson scored just a few seconds after that. So
Anyway, Shayna Goldman's coming up at the bottom of the hour. There's been lots of news around the league as far as
what did I answer yesterday when you asked me who signs first, Mercer or Perfetti? And I think I said Mercer, right? I think I said Perfetti is not going to... Mercer's.
There's only one person that should be keeping score on this, and that's producer Jeff. So unless he emphatically rules like one or the other. Because I know that you don't listen to me, and you can presume that I don't listen to you in enough detail to always remember.
But I remember you asked the question. I just don't remember how the question was asked.
Strong delivery of the question, my friend.
Yeah, it's exactly, very strong.
But, okay, now I'm glad you brought that up, because we're going to kind of revisit that with Shayna, but in a different form. Now, I did want to ask you again for a second consecutive day, how long until Jeremy Swayman signs? Because I don't truly believe the answer that you delivered yesterday.
I think the more and more I go back and listen to Don Sweeney's press and the history between last summer having to go to arbitration and Swayman taking notes in arbitration, you think I'm in that category of goalies? Mm-hmm. I'm going to prove you wrong. And he proved them wrong, because they traded Linus Ullmark and they are giving him the keys to the castle to Jeremy Swayman, but he's not signed. I think this will be...
What a visual. Like, long rusted metal key to a castle.
Like one of those old keys, right? That you put into a door and it's like you turn it three times and you got to knock in the right spot for the latch to not stick and get out, right? Like, that's what it is. And Sweeney being frustrated with the whole thing. Unless really it could happen. Unless Cam Neely walks into Don Sweeney's office and says, "Hey, get it together. Let's get it done, because I cannot go 2 months here and hope that we're going to have a good season without Jeremy Swayman. Just can't happen." So I still think it's going to be a last second deal, unless somebody comes in and tells Don Sweeney to get it done.
And when you say last second, you mean last second, like late in November.
Yeah, November 30th.
I can't believe before, you're saying this.
Before the December 1st.
Okay, like, I'm going to ask you this on the pregame show tomorrow night, too. Because I just...
But Don Sweeney is confident it's going to get done before December 1st. Like, what a quote.
Okay, well, okay. So is that the best quote from the Bruins right now? Or is this the best quote?
Okay.
From Jonas Korpisalo. Jeremy Swayman's absence doesn't change my job.
Well, wrong. It changes your job. You. You know what? Yes. I can tell you this. Being a starter and playing every game or 3 out of 4 and being a backup is a big difference. So, yes, it changes your job. I will say... this, that, or the other thing, which is the weirdest quote? One, Don Sweeney saying, I'm confident Swayman is signed before December 1st. That's a quote. Mm-hmm. Two, is Don Sweeney saying, Jeremy Swayman is withholding his services to the team.
Yeah.
He's not withholding anything. He doesn't have a contract. I'm like, why would you? Again, I'm listening to him say that. Mm-hmm. It's not somebody that is in the last year of their deal and decide to hold out for an extension or whatnot. That's not what it is. But Korpisalo is saying that if Swayman's not there, his job doesn't change, could probably win the prize for this.
I'm sorry. We don't have enough time to, you know, do these tangents right now, but all these things.
Shayna would love them. Shayna will join in.
That's what I think. I need to save Tom Fitzgerald for yes. Shayna here. Jeff, this is ridiculous. You should have never put that quote from Fitzgerald in front of me. So that means I have to wait. And
also, want to just tell you because we have a tangent.
Am I this? If I don't mention this, am I one of these types if I just save it for the next segment? Anyway.
No, you have to. You have to leave everybody on a cliffhanger, and you won't be able to say the actual quote. You're going to have to find a different word
really?
For Tom Fitzgerald.
If Tom Fitzgerald said it, I'm good with it.
Yeah, I know. Well, you can do it. I won't do it. But I want everybody to go on X, at Sabres Live, and get a look of the rendering that our great crew in studio did to the Alumni Plaza and the overpass, right? We all know that it's going to get a new look this year. And the Sabres even tweeted, what alumni do you want to see on the overpass? And so I want everybody to go on Sabres Live.
It's not an overpass. It's a walkway.
The walkway. The overpass. Yeah, it's not a highway overpass. It's like a walkway. So the walkway from the parking garage to, you know, the arena there in Alumni Plaza. Mm-hmm. I want you guys to go on Sabres Live and see how good it would look with just one person on there. Three of them, but just one person.
Well, I've been worried that it's going to be all you for the last couple of days now that it's been cleaned off. So anyway, Shayna Goldman is next, and we will we will end the suspense when she joins us about the Fitzgerald quote. Next on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
If we change the name of the show, which we're not planning to, unscripted would be good. And it never ceases to amaze what gets discussed right before Shayna Goldman comes on the air on her Friday appearance on Sabres Live. The last word was actually mature, uttered by Marty. Oh. And again, that's not a phrase that gets used often with this group. And Shayna, we did a very dramatic tease before the break. Now, I will read the full quote because I don't think it's a swear word, and it is attributed to Tom Fitzgerald. And his quote was, "We want good people, no dickheads, just good people." You don't need to reiterate that word. I know everybody's on pins and needles as to whether I should have said it, but I think it's a hilarious quote. And what a way to launch into your Friday appearance. Like, seriously, wouldn't
it's perfect for me, right? Like, that's a very tame word. So I'm very surprised. Sorry, Meek is very emotional, but I'm very surprised that, like, I'm not the first one to drop a bomb on this while I'm on here. So thank you for taking that.
Thank you. Well,
yeah, well, you know what? It's funny because when my son decided to join a team, it was Jason York's team in Kentville in the CCHL. One of our first meeting, he's like, we used to have a bunch of, you know, bad people. So he used a different word that I can't use on here. It's not the one, the one you use, but he basically know this in our team. That was the selling point for me. So when Tom Fitzgerald was asked about how do you find good character players or whatever, well, that was his quote. That was about as basic as it can get. And
maybe you should send that memo up to Edmonton because they have like the complete different approach.
Well played. See, this will surprise no one that Shayna delivers the great line here within the first minute of her appearance. Now, Shayna, yesterday I prompted Marty with the question, you know, which RFA would sign first, whether it was going to be Perfetti or Mercer. Now, we know that Dawson obviously won the race, got it done 3x4. Unless I missed it, Perfetti's still not done yet, correct? Nope. Right. Okay, so I wanted to reissue this question in a different way to both of you. Perfetti or Mercer, who would you rather have?
Go ahead, Shayna, because
Where I'm the same way. Like, okay, if I'm the New Jersey Devils right now, I prefer to have Dawson Mercer because he is exactly what that top nine needs. He brings a totally different skill set than a lot of their guys who bring, you know, that incredible play in transition and they're amazing playmakers. And Dawson has that dog in him. It's exactly what they need to punch up their offense. So I think he's the perfect fit for them. But I think someone like Perfetti is super valuable too. If I really had to get into the nitty gritty and I really had to decide, I'm going to give a very, very, very slight edge to Mercer because I think he adds a little bit more versatility to the lineup. I think he can be trusted to play top 6 minutes and we've seen him step up when he needs to, but he also can play down the middle or on the wing. And I think that's super valuable to have in today's game. So I am all for positional flexibility and just having more options with your lineup that I'm going to give him the very slight edge.
But you have to think that Perfetti is going to make more money maybe than Mercer. Like he's a,
I think so.
Like,
but why?
But he can score probably 25 to 30 and so get you Dawson. Like 60
they're
points.
They're both first rounders from the same draft class and they're both at basically just over half a point a game right now.
Yeah, but I think Perfetti has a higher ceiling in what he can give you. Mercer, I love Mercer. I'd take him on my team any day of the week.
Right, but why would Perfetti get more money now when he's played almost half, like fewer games?
Well, if you're the Devils, you leverage the fact that Mercer's coming off of a bad season, right? And they
Perfetti's not coming off a great year.
I know, Mercer's was
three points in 26 games and then only played once in the playoffs.
Well, I think new coaches, new vibe there a little bit. And I think the same with Mercer to an extent because I feel like he got almost stale last season and they tried in so many ways, right? Like, okay, so you cannot be a top six winger right now. You are not playing up to the level of the top six that they need you to. Okay, you're going to go on the third line. Oh, you can't even drive the third line and play down the middle that you're shifting to wing. Like when they know what he can do at the NHL level and then he goes as flat as he did, I see why he would get less money. And the other part of it is if you're the Devils, you have to keep the salary low. And if you're Mercer, you have to agree to that short-term deal because it would be the worst position, I think, for him to sign a long-term deal because he wouldn't get his maximum value.
And I almost feel that Perfetti seeing Mercer sign a 4-year deal kind of is like, listen, you can probably take a 3 or 4 year deal at $3.5 to $4 million, or we're going to give you 5.25, 5.5 on a 6 or 7 year deal. Like I, as a player making that a little bit more money and the longer term, I would take that. I would take the 7-year deal at 5.5 if I'm Perfetti, as opposed to the 4 for 4 that Mercer did. Like that's almost the way that I look at it.
It's 3 years, $4 million.
Three for four. Yeah, you're right. 3 for 4. So $12 million. But still, like I would take the 7-year, 5.5 Perfetti over 3 years, $4 million for
Why Mercer. Would Perfetti ever agree to that?
Guaranteed money. It's money.
That's
put
the
in
thing,
his pocket.
Right? And in today's game, how many players?
By the way,
like
I love them both, and I'm just playing an angle here to get more insight, you know, from you guys. So
you're doing a good job at that. Yeah. I'm like, wait a second, you're really pushing us on the whole thing. I think you like Cole Perfetti, Duffer. I mean,
I do. He's from my hometown of Whitby, Ontario. I have to like him.
Write it down.
I listen to you sometimes, and I think you've always spoke highly of Cole Perfetti. So that's what it is.
Didn't we Zoom with him during COVID? Before his draft?
Yes, that was the draft. Perfetti was one of them.
Yeah.
I really liked him. He talked about playing a little bit more like the Brinket, I think. That's something that he talked about. So, yeah.
Well, what else is big news, Shayna, right now?
Mo Sider.
Yes.
Big RFA. Well,
is the bigger story in Detroit not the fact that Larkin still remains the bar and they were able to keep Sider and Raymond under it? Like,
yeah.
And I phrase it this way because I'm presenting it as, shouldn't we have always expected that this is how Steve Yzerman is going to run this?
Yes and no, right? Like, some teams have those internal caps. And, like, the Sabres, to an extent, did it up front, right? It felt like Tage Thompson was the bar and everyone had to go below that. Obviously, defense is a different story. And even New Jersey, to an extent, felt like Jack Hughes was the bar. And if I remember correctly, Timo Meier's average annual value is higher, but the cap hit percentage, like, you know, you could use that as your gauge instead. Mm-hmm. Sure. Mm-hmm. But in Detroit's case, do I think they needed a hard stop? And this is the thing in hockey, right? Why would a player take a contract that you go, you're worth more than that? There's the pressure from the team to be like, oh, you have to be a team player and you have to fit under X. Do I think it's a bad thing that either one of these contracts is under Larkin's salary? No, because Detroit should want to save every penny that they can. And, you know, now that we know that they went big on both deals, we can kind of understand why they didn't go as big in free agency or via trade like we hoped mm-hmm. that they would have. I don't think it's bad for Sider to be under 8.7 because this contract is a huge swing as it is, and he has to prove that he is up to that level. And obviously it's going to take the Red Wings not burying him in the worst usage in the league to do so.
Yeah.
But I would say of the two players that I could have seen matching or exceeding Larkin, it wouldn't have been Sider anyway. It would have been Larkin, but center mm-hmm. versus wing, you can have that whole other discussion. So, you know, there's a million ways to look at it. I don't think it's the worst thing for the Red Wings, but of course, if I'm a player, I'm going to be like, I don't care. That contract was signed years ago, and that's not my problem.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what's surprising to me is, like, we don't, like, it's, to me, it's harder to live in this artificial team cap world when inflation is so high and the cap rises, right? Like, every player should be like, I don't care about your internal team cap. I'm entitled to this because that's what the market is nowadays.
I thought Sider was a $9 million defenseman. Like, I'll be honest yeah. with you. I didn't think he was going to come in below Larkin, and he did. And I thought even if he comes in a little over Larkin, like, that is his market value, in my opinion. So did he take less? Yeah. Was it like, hey, you want to be in camp? You want to play preseason games? You want to have a good year? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think there's some pressure points that Steve Yzerman has used there for Mo Sider, and it worked. Those same pressure points, Shayna, are not working on Jeremy Swayman. And I have listened over and over and over again to Don Sweeney's press availability. And you mentioned about people that are getting angry or are kind of on tilt a little bit. I feel like Don Sweeney's on tilt with the whole Swayman and saying that December 1st is he's confident that they'll get done before December 1st. The Bruins can't afford Swayman to miss 2 months. So where do you see Swayman's contract go? But also, is Don Sweeney digging his heels in a place where he shouldn't be because that's going to hurt?
I think the fact that he's punting it to December, not being like, he has to be signed by training camp start or the beginning of the season. And he's kind of like setting the distance out for as much as he can. So I think that's okay. But you look at the entire situation and like what's going on right now. You have Swayman, who everybody loves, right? Here's a guy who has a great personality, seems like a nice guy, and he thrived for the Bruins this year. And when everyone questioned, can he handle playing, you know, consecutive games in the playoffs? He was like, yeah, I can, and I'm going to kill it. So yeah. He's earned all of that and more. And they traded Ullmark. So you know what has to happen here because you're not running with Corpus Allo. I don't care how good the Bruins are defensively. That is not going to be your number one guy. We all know it. And that is great leverage for Swayman to have. Sweeney's always going to look like the bad guy here. And in a way, he is. This is why arbitration is a problem. This is why players who go to arbitration with their teams generally don't stick with their teams long term because it is an arduous process where the team literally decides to tear down their players. And while they think they need to do that to keep the cap hit down, I think every general manager needs a nice reminder, and hopefully this situation can serve as one, that you do not need to be as rough with your players as you are in arbitration, because you will burn bridges long term. There is a way to get things done, and I know every GM thinks that they have all the power and leverage over the world over an RFA. These are still your players, and they're very important to you. And while they might be replaceable, good luck replacing him specifically.
Marty, did you see the little note out of San Jose camp yesterday?
Best shape of their lives. Everybody's in best shape of their lives because they were in best shape of their lives.
Askarov, right? Askarov is day to day.
He's day to day. Yeah, I did see that. There's a
tough start.
Well, tough start, and look, this is not a short term thing. The San Jose Sharks acquired Askarov for the long term.
Right. Hopefully, the injury is short term.
But it is a tough start for him. Mm-hmm. You know what is interesting is that word out of Montreal was that the Montreal Canadiens inquired on Yaroslav Askarov.
Oh, of course.
The Nashville Predators wanted, who's the kid in college?
Lane Hudson?
The goalie. I'm gonna get his name right now because it's is it Fowler? Is it Jacob Fowler? Goalie that they have? Yeah, Fowler.
I think so.
Yeah, they wanted Jacob Fowler.
Some good TV and radio right here.
I know, exactly.
It's Friday.
Well, no, because there's Cam Fowler, there's this. I'm like, wait a second. I've got a lot of names in my head right now, but they wanted Jacob Fowler in return, and the Canadians said no. So, was that a fair ask by Nashville? Absolutely. Is Montreal really banking on their young prospect who's playing college hockey right now to be an answer in 3 or 4 years down the road? Yes, but I don't think Askarov is the answer right now anyway in San Jose. It's a few years down the road that they're hoping he steps up, but it's not a good start.
Nashville got their goalie in the deal anyway in Krona. Remember we talked about that? His last NHL game was giving up 8 to Nashville.
Yeah, so they know that they can build their confidence in practice, but yeah. That's the way to...
Shana,
are you huge on scrimmage? And, like, I'm watching around the league right now. It's Toronto, Craig Berube. You know, it's a different atmosphere in camp. Like, he's pushing them to the limit. Even here in Buffalo, Lindy, it's a different atmosphere. Philly is like, oh, the skate test, it's terrible. But it gets... Eric Johnson says, it gets us together that we're doing this. Like, are you huge on those quotes in camp right now? Or are you like, put that in the garbage and see how you are by November 1st?
It's all crap. Sorry, I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. But it really is. Like, I have no other way to put it. And I edited myself from what I could have said. It is... Seriously, I get it. You have to say this stuff and you want to get the vibes up and you want to get everyone like ready to run through a brick wall, right? Like if you're especially a new coach, right? You're Lindy Ruff right now. You're like, I got to get these Sabres ready to do anything for me and be hyped to go into the season. And guys, veteran players need to be doing the same thing and everyone's in the best shape of their lives. And that's great and wonderful. I literally do not care. Do not get injured. Do not anything else. Just do what you need to do. Start clicking, get it going. But it is so overhyped. I try to like tune it out and I just pay attention to the quick things like, oh, this player's injured. Okay. Note that for something I'm writing. Right. Otherwise, nope. Does not matter to me. Show me when the season starts and show me it. Not just game one, but game 60.
We have to break, unfortunately, but just know that I do plan to start a new game with both of you the next time you return to Sabres Live, which I hope is next Friday. Do we don't have a game next Friday, do we?
We do have a game. Show leading on to the game.
Yeah, but I won't be on the show.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I won't launch into the game then. All right, we got a break. Thanks, Shana.
Thanks.
We're back after this on Sabres Live.
Friday vibes.
We're back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Can't wait to see y'all here at KeyBank Center tomorrow night. It's our first preseason game of the year, and I hope you take note of the emerging artwork in Alumni Plaza, Marty.
Yes. Coming soon. Come in soon right now. And this obviously was tweeted by Pete, our big, big boss, and I can't wait to see what comes out. Although, our crew, and if you're watching on Sabres Live, you can see that I look really good black and red on Alumni Plaza walkway. I think that would be a draw downtown. People would take pictures with Josh Allen's Gatorade ad and my picture on the Alumni Plaza walkover. So I think that would be the two staples.
See you tomorrow night, 6:30.
Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos.